Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Fantasy Baseball Today starts right now. I am Chris Welsh, and back in the driver's seat is Scott White, fresh off of like a crazy, raucous hangover-like wedding tour. What all did you do, Scott? Did you end on a roof with a mattress and people are looking for you for 3 days?
I ate tacos.
Yeah, then what else? And like, you had to get broken out of jail because there was a car in the middle of the road.
No, I got some like sauce on my tie.
Did you hang out with like Mike Tyson and like take his tiger or anything?
I hugged my cousins.
Well, that's pretty close to Mike Tyson and a tiger, I guess. So okay, so it sounds pretty ruckus.
Yeah, it was a wild time.
Yeah, it was a good time. We missed you. We all missed you. Our buddy pitcherless Nick Pollock, he filled in a very, very good response. Shout out to everybody on the good response. As I said before, it was like the teenager being left home alone without the parents. I kind of missed you. I feel like we've got a good vibe, and I'm used to my time with Scott White, and I'm glad to have you back.
He was destroying your flow, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. That's easy to do with me, of course. So it is good to have you back. A lot going on in the world right now. I was actually out at the Salt River Fields out here in Phoenix for all you baseball people that might care. I interviewed Royce Lewis, top prospect that you might see next week or next year, maybe next week. I don't think you'll see him. I'll see him. But next year, you'll probably see him, and check out Prospect One if you want to hear that interview. And only three more shows till the end. Teardrop, cry emoji. Only three more, Scott?
Yeah, third to last show of the regular season. Now, I don't know who exactly we is going to consist of, but certainly a lot of me will be, making weekly appearances in the off season. Keep you up to date on off season happenings, a little foretaste for 2020 preview stuff, I'm sure. Much more open-ended conversation in the off-season shows. I think that
love it.
That makes them more fun in a way. So stay tuned throughout the off-season if you're somebody who likes fantasy baseball or just us.
Yeah, there you go. Those are great sells right there. I'm all for it. And we are going to attempt to get to some 2020 talk today. We're going to see how it goes every time. There's so much to talk about. And, I've heard a lot of good response. You guys are getting your help in winning your championships right now, and I know you guys value it. So I want to make sure we cover as much as possible to help you in that. But I have got a nice locked and loaded set of emails for 2020 conversation. But let's kick the show right off here because we were reunited and it has felt so good. Four relatively top name players have all returned on Tuesday, led by Luis Severino, who we've been waiting on the entire year. Luis Severino returned with the Yankees, went 4 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs, 2 walks and 4 strikeouts, 67 total pitches. And from Brian Hotch, I got this info from his tweet, through 67 pitches, generated 13 swing and misses, averaged 96.6 miles per hour on his fastball, maxed at 98.8, threw 37 fastballs, 19 sliders, and 11 changeups. How you like dim apples?
It was oh so close. Luis Severino was my cover boy on the two-star pitcher rankings column for this week. The guy, kind of like worked out for Johnny Cueto last week. Fresh off the IL, hurried rehab assignment. Could we trust him right away? Well, he had a big lead. He pitched great. Threw about as many pitches as in his last rehab start, but they didn't let him throw anymore. He was just an inning shy of qualifying for the win, which makes it not such a success. Obviously, he helped ratio, so that's good. And it looks like he is in line to make a second start Sunday. Who knows what could change between now and then? And in which case, I would think he'd be allowed to throw 67 pitches. I would hope more than that.
Would you put him out there though? Like if he's under the same restraints.
Well, it's Toronto.
Well, I know it's Toronto, but if it's under the same restraints, he's got to be relatively as effective. I mean, unless he pulls an ultra effective Johnny Cueto start, I suppose, to go 5. I guess all I'm alluding to is ratios are good. The matchup looks pretty solid, But if you're really vying for that win, I mean, you feel, I guess if the start isn't worrisome enough, you just play it out. And then, you know, if everything goes well, maybe you get five innings and you get the win. I'm just not so hopeful he's going to get there.
Well, do they want him in their postseason rotation or not? I would think they do. I mean, he's a healthy Luis Severino is the best pitcher they have. They're already kind of committing to not having Domingo Germán in their postseason rotation, who's probably been their best pitcher with Severino sidelined this season. So you're talking here
stretching out?
Stretching him out. Like, that's why I was surprised they kind of cut him off at the same point that is as his last rehab start. Like 75, 80 pitches next time out. You know, unless they explicitly say they're not going to do that, I think this was enough of a success that I would feel good about starting Severino against the Blue Jays next time out.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think the big comment after the game was he walked away from this start good. There were no issues, and there would be no reason to halt him back. So as long as he's effective, going five seems very, very obtainable. It's a pretty good start. And he mixed his pitches, hit top velocity. I mean, he's checking all the boxes for us to feel fantastic. It's unfortunate. It's the second week before the year ends. The second to last week.
Yeah, and of the pitchers coming back, I think he's the only one with a real chance of making a fantasy impact because he actually had a rehab assignment. He was actually able to go for his first start back.
Unlike Blake Snell, who tonight went up against the Dodgers. You know, and I had really harped that, like, I don't want any part of this start. I think I said it with Nick on the last show. Now, the positive is he did nothing to hurt you outside. He only went two innings. He got four strikeouts, but no walks, no one runs, none of that stuff. But he only hit 26 pitches, and then he was out. He was out after the second inning. So any feeling of positivity on the back end of this, or do you think it's let's have Blake Snell be an opener the rest of the way through? Because this feels opener-ish.
Well, I would imagine he gets two more of these over the rest of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll be built up to five innings by that second start. If the Rays do advance to the postseason, obviously, I mean, you could say the same thing. It's just he has further to go than Severino to be built up to go that far. And I don't think it's going to happen. And even from like a ratios perspective, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to use Blake Snell versus some, you know, high leverage reliever who's more accustomed to that role and has a longer track record of pitching well in that role than somebody like Snell.
Yeah, and you're right, because Snell's also not going to get the opportunity if he fumbles at all early on. He's not going to get the opportunity to get right, so it has the potential to blow up your ratios. Sure, that's great if you get two or three innings with a couple strikeouts, but it seems a little bit more, I don't know if you would risk it for the biscuit, as they would say.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And then the third guy, the third starting pitcher making his return is Brandon Woodruff, and it's the same thing for him. Two innings, four strikeouts, only one walk. Look great. In fact, but of Severino, Snell, and Woodruff, only Woodruff's velocity was in midseason form. Only he was throwing pitches as hard as he was before, well, the last time we saw him. But 37 pitches, again, didn't have like an actual minor league rehab assignment, kind of like Snell. So it's the same situation there where I don't think there's just going to be a chance for you to use him and expect him to make a real impact for your fantasy team.
And it's important because I know a lot of you are going to probably be asking these questions post these starts. I was looking, Woodruff was interesting on CBS, owned 71% overall, but only started 12%. So maybe people not realizing, maybe people worried, whatever it is. I know you're going to have the questions. There you go, from Scott. Snell and Woodruff, probably not worth it. Severino would be the fourth player, though not a pitcher, who returned on Tuesday. Maybe a little bit of a shock that he actually did get back was Carlos Correa. Two notes, 0 for 4 with three strikeouts. Not great, but also they hit him seventh. So, you know, I don't know where you can really take this. This isn't a guy, Scott, that you're going to say, hey, bench him until he gets right. You're going to probably put him out there unless you had great options. It's just don't love to see him throwing him at seven. And he's a little bit rusty, obviously, 0 for 4 with three strikeouts.
Yeah, but everyday player, obviously it's not the same situation as a pitcher, because there's no need for like a buildup, and obviously it's day after day that they're going to be able to play him. I think with some of the players, some of the high-end players that are now having to bow out for the rest of the season, Carlos Correa is going to be a pretty easy start for most people. I mean, it's a deep lineup, so it stands to reason they're batting him seventh. You know, he's behind Jordan Alvarez and Yuli Gurriel. I mean, it's a star-studded lineup there the Astros have. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be fixed at seventh spot for the final week and a half of the season necessarily.
Hate to do it to you, Scott, but Jordan Alvarez. Hate to do it.
See, that's been a contentious one, so I kind of guessed which way we were leaning with it at this point. But Jordan Alvarez, fair enough.
That one does hurt. Every time I look at it, I'm like, yeah, Jordan. The other interesting note, how much do you buy into this? Yankees manager Aaron Boone said Giancarlo Stanton could be activated Wednesday.
Yeah, that's obviously good. Now, I would expect a higher level of rust for him than for Carlos Correa. And as many options as the Yankees have between outfield and DH, in a daily league, I'm not sure I'm going to be rushing Stanton back out there. But, you know, weekly league, he finishes out the week strong. I think there's certainly a chance he's like a top 30, top 20, potentially even outfielder the rest of the way. So, it probably is already owned. And if you happen to be a playoff team or a team that's still participating and have him in your IL spot, I don't think you drop him. I think you make room for him on your bench and see how this week plays out and then make a lineup decision based on that.
And they said if he's not there Wednesday, for sure he'll be there Thursday. Yep. So everybody marking Giancarlo Stanton back for that final week at least.
And last I saw, Joey Gallo is supposed to return Friday, right?
I didn't see the note. I didn't go to look to Joey Gallo, but that is a good one and something we will check back in with for the Friday show for sure. But be on the lookout for Joey Gallo. Some power hitters coming back, which is a nice little, you know, the Lord of baseball taketh, and sometimes they giveth back, like Giancarlo Stanton and Joey Gallo. We've got a couple games that are in progress as we're recording this. This is close into, actually, to midnight Eastern. We have got a couple that were in extra innings, and I'm only noting a few of these. Diamondbacks, Marlins, you've got Royals and A's, Dodgers and Rays. But Ketel Marte was taken out of the fifth due to back stiffness with the Diamondbacks. So that's going to be something to monitor. I don't know how severe it could be. You'd have to imagine next game he's going to sit, but this could have some impact for your weekend lineup. So you may need to take some aggressive offensive actions as far as players go. But as far as Tuesday go, you got any standouts that you would like to target? We got a ton of stuff we're going to be covering, lots of pitchers. We've got some more hitters, tons of emails, but who would you like to highlight as your standout?
Probably have to start with Kevin Biggio, who hit for the cycle. And not only that, he stole two bases. So we're talking one of the best single game performances for any player this year.
What do you call that, by the way? Because they say a homer and a stolen base is a combo meal. Did he supersize his combo meal?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure I'd even heard the combo meal before.
I'm going to call it a happy meal. That's what it is. They say combo meal is the combo meal is a homer and stolen base combined in a night. This is going to be a happy meal cycle with two stolen bases. Pretty awesome. Also had four hits in his five previous games, was hitting .265 during the month of September with only one homer and two stolen bases. So he literally doubled his output in this one single game because he had been struggling.
Oh, yeah. He'd been struggling. He hasn't really lived up to, I think, the most optimistic projections for him. And, I'm not necessarily thinking this changes that for the final week and a half, that he's somebody you need to look into. But yeah, he's done some things really right. The home run pace is good. He's 13 for 13 in steals and basically half a season's work. His walk rate is near, well, it's like 17%. It's tremendous. It's just strikeout issues and launch angle issues, maybe selling out too much for the home run, are really holding back that batting average. Those are things that could change. I mean, I don't think he's somebody who we should necessarily dismiss heading into next year. I mean, I think there's a good case to be made for him as a potential sleeper or breakout or whatever you want to call him. And, you know, a game like this is a reminder of just what kind of impact he could have.
There were some interesting pitching matchups that are actually going on right now. And I just want to note Alex Young, who we've talked a lot about. The Diamondbacks are losing 5-4 in the bottom of the sixth, but he walked out only giving up one earned run with four strikeouts in five innings as he left the game. Him going up against Caleb Smith, who went five but gave up four earned runs and four strikeouts. And then in the Tampa game, we talked about how Blake Snell came out after two innings. They had a weird thing where they like scratched Ross Stripling from starting the game, yet he came in it looks like the fourth inning and went two innings, striking out three, and the Dodgers are losing. So he would have been in line for a save. So they implemented just an entire, you know, opener situation with Caleb Ferguson and Stripling and just a whole setup there. So just a couple notes as far as the guys that are going on.
A bullpen game with former starters.
Yeah, as the a Dodger game is the better way to say it.
Sure.
Just an actual Dodger game. All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we got a whole bunch to cover. And this break is our friends over at ZipRecruiter, because hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/strike. That's ZipRecruiter.com/STRIKE, ZipRecruiter.com/strike. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so I know that everybody's top of mind right now has got to be what to do with starting pitching. In fact, what are the daily asks we're going to get? Should I start this guy on Wednesday? Should I start this guy on Thursday? Well, I know we've been Monday, Wednesday, Friday, so I figured with only a week left to go, I know we're always going to talk about the performances of the night. We want to hit on two starting pitchers, the two starters, but I want to focus on tomorrow. I want to, as you guys are listening to this, on today on the Wednesday pitchers and some Thursday pitchers. So I went and took a look at the probable starters, and we actually have some decisions that we can go out and make. So Wednesday starting pitchers that are around 50% owned, I've got three for you, Scott. Homer Bailey, 58% versus Kansas City. He's got 6 straight starts of not giving up more than 3 earned runs, 4 wins in that time, 13-8 record with a 4.76 ERA on the season. Sandy Alcantara, I always screw it up.
Alcantara.
Okay. 51% versus Arizona, coming off of 2 straight quality starts, 1 earned run in those with a complete game. 5-13 record, though, just under 4 ERA. And his last up against Arizona, though, he did go 6, 3 walks and 4 strikeouts. And then Mike Leake, 54% owned, going up against Miami. 4 straight quality starts in 26 innings, though. The last, he's only got 11 strikeouts. So all these 50% owned guys, Homer Bailey, Sandy, Mike Leake, where are you going on Wednesday? As long as I cannot say Sandy's last name is what I'm trying to do. That's why you're laughing.
I said it wrong, too. It's Alcantara.
Alcantara, yes.
Yes, yes. I think if I'm choosing between those three, I go Homer Bailey. I'd be fine with, honestly, Sandy Alcantara, the way he's finishing the season, I mean, he might show up on my breakout list next year. I'm very encouraged by this. But he does pitch for the Marlins. It makes getting a win difficult.
We've come so far, too. I just remember, you know, just like a little baby, like a month ago, we were just hating on Sandy, and it's turned around. He really has been magnificent in our time. He's grown together with you and I.
He has. It's like he wanted to bring us together. He wanted to forge that bond.
You're so right.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I should point out, and maybe this goes without saying, but like, obviously, the first place you should be looking for pitching help isn't the waiver wire. This is strictly, I have a need. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do?
And
okay,
we're at the
here's,
point
here's
of the,
here's the best of a bad. Here's the way you make the best of a bad situation. You go get Homer Bailey. You go get Sandy Alcantara. I don't trust Mike Leake at all. I understand it's the Marlins, but I, you know, that's getting really desperate, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and we are, to reiterate, we are at that point of the year. The long-term plan is you want to set yourself up so you're not quite in this type of a situation, but anybody's, regardless of the pitching situation you have, I have a situation in the league I'm vying for a championship in right now. I have a good team, a very good team, really strong starting pitching, but I had all of my guys go to start last week, which put me over. I was in a huge hole coming into the first 3 days of the start of this week because a lot of my good pitchers, they weren't going. This other guy not only had some decent options, but he was doing the streaming. So sure, ERA and WHIP can get ahead of him. So I needed to counter. I did counter. Actually, I picked up Trent Thornton, and that it didn't work, but it was okay. It got me some innings and it did some stuff, but it wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but it kept me in. So I didn't get really, really behind in strikeouts. I was still, you know, working out with ERA and stuff. So just saying that we have a bigger plan. A lot of people might have gotten blown up in the first couple days, or they might see how far they are behind, and they have got to reach for these. And Homer Bailey feels like a fantastic option to go with. Do you see Alcantara as like the same value as Homer Bailey as far as a starter goes for Wednesday?
I mean, Bailey has the better matchup, and he certainly has the better win potential. So you have to factor those in. But Alcantara, he's gone 7-plus innings in 6 of 7.
And he had that complete game start 2 starts ago.
He's thrown, gotten 7-plus strikeouts in 4 of those 7. That, like, that's really what's changed for him, is he started to get strikeouts. And, I mean, that could be a total game changer for a guy with who, you know, has a knack for pitching deep into games and, for the most part, keeps the ball on the ground, is good at home run prevention. He's definitely somebody to watch. I think there's little chance that Alcantara hurts you too badly in this start. I just don't think there's the potential for him to be quite as helpful as Bailey.
So if Bailey is sitting out there for anybody and you're looking to make a play, there's your play. Sandy's not a bad option. What about some fringier options? There's two here. Danny Duffy, who's only 23% owned in CBS leagues, he's going up against Oakland. We just talked about what a good play that Homer Bailey is, but Danny Duffy does have 3 straight quality starts, 5 earned runs and 14 strikeouts in those starts, with a 4.5 ERA, 6-6 record on the season. And then I'm just throwing this one out here to get your take on it, but CC Sabathia, who's only 22% owned, he's got the Angels. He hasn't gone 5 since July 16th, and there's still a question, will they continue to kind of play around in an opener type of a situation? Opener or no opener is the question. So, and he's going up against the Angels. So is Sabathia at all an option? And what about Duffy versus Bailey?
I'd prefer Duffy, who's looked good since coming back from the IL. 3 straight quality starts, but obviously going against Oakland, that's not a great matchup. Sabathia, I mean, yeah, they've been piggybacking Domingo Herman with him. And yeah, I don't trust that to change. I think between these two, I would go Duffy, but this is getting like really toward the bottom of the barrel here. Like you have to understand you're sacrificing certain things to get ahead in others. If you're turning to Duffy, or certainly if you're turning to Sabathia, like just pursuing strikeouts at all costs.
And sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you have to make that play. Sometimes you do. How are you doing, by the way? Any championships we're vying for? I know you had a whole bunch. Are you you in the thick of it right now?
The same 5 that I was still in the hunt for last time we spoke.
No big deal.
Yep. Still in contention for those. Two of them, or just one? I think just one is a roto league that, you know, I feel pretty confident I'm going to win. And then 3 head-to-head leagues and a sim league where anything could still happen there. But I had the best regular season team in 2 of those 3 head-to-head leagues. So I'm feeling pretty good about my chances in those 2.
Well, our friend Mike in New York said, hey, guys, you wanted to hear some of your listeners or how some of your listeners are doing. I don't remember asking that, but I'm cool with that. I always like to hear from people. He says, I only play in two leagues, a 15-team dynasty league where I was locked into third. That's in the money, but 20-plus points behind the leader. Still good this year because I joined the league late and inherited a garbage team. And he's very happy he picked up Nico Horner, my guy Nico. He said, I made some good pickups in Cueto and Alcantara. Thanks for this one, as he wasn't someone I was considering. I'm up 140 points going into the final week of the two-week championship and I'm feeling really good about winning my third title. I like this line here. He goes, I sometimes disagree with you guys, but I've been listening daily for several years now, so I'm sure that you have helped me.
I'm sure. it's just seeped in while I was disagreeing.
Those are my favorite, like, it's like a backhanded compliment. It's like, you guys probably did something, but yeah, I disagree
sure
with you guys.
Did. Yeah.
I'm really glad I stuck it out with Darvish and Flaherty for this year, and I'm glad that my move for the future didn't prevent me from potentially winning this year. Let's get them ships. I just thought that was funny. And interesting overall when you have those compliments like, I disagree with you guys. I listen, yeah. But you probably helped. I bet.
I mean, I would think everybody listening disagrees with us sometimes.
Like, definitely me.
That would be normal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, especially since not everybody talking on the show agrees on the talking points all that often with each other. So,
yeah. And disagreement is good. I mean, and there's no way you guys haven't learned stuff. I mean, I've been doing fantasy baseball podcasting for 5+ years. It's not obviously what Adam and Scott have been doing, but I'll tell you right now, I've learned a ton being on with you guys. There's a different way to approach some of this stuff too. And it's been a positive for me as a host, and I've been analyzing fantasy baseball for a long time, and being on here has helped me. So I won't say you guys have probably helped me. You guys have definitely helped me in doing the hosting, but I know it was a nice compliment. That's what you were going for, Mike, and I can appreciate that. I wanted to kick over to the Thursday starting pitching ads because we are not going to be here on Thursday. So there's only two, and I'm just interested in your take on these because there's a lot of guys that you would expect. And you can tell me, I don't like this. I absolutely love this. These are must starts. And the two are Joe Musgrove, who's 66% owned. He's going up against Seattle. His last three starts, gone 17 innings, 5 earned runs, and 18 Ks. And the very often talked about Jordan Lyles, who is 69% owned versus San Diego. And he's given up 2 earned runs or more only once in his last 5 starts, 7 innings and 12 Ks versus San Diego this year. So Lyles and Musgrove are relatively high-ish owned, but they still might be sitting out there, and people might have questions if they want to put them out. So what do you think about Musgrove and Lyles on Thursday?
Well, I don't really trust what Lyles has been doing because there haven't been a lot of missed bats along the way, and I'm just afraid that's going to blow up in our faces if we put our faith in him now. So I can't fully get behind that one, but there may be a situation where there's, you know, it's the best you can do.
So if you were like really skimming along, really nice, good ratios, wins, you got some starters this weekend, Lyles is someone you're sitting?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think most people listening wouldn't want anything to do with Lyles. It's more if you just need to take a shot on anything you can.
What if Jordan Lyles,
whether it's
listening,
to catch up,
Scott,
in certain categories or to catch up in overall scoring, then yeah, Lyles is maybe somebody you could turn to.
What if he was listening? And you're like, nobody would ever use Lyles. And he's like, hey, I'm sitting over here. I'm starting. I'm good. He's going to pitch a gym now just to spite you. I promise you.
Well, good for him if he does. I mean, he's 69% owned. That's some people are buying into it. It's been a nice stretch with the Brewers. It's just not in a way that I think is sustainable. And then for Musgrove, I wanted to confirm, because different sources are saying different pitchers are going that day, and it's always going to be a day-to-day thing this time of year. But if assuming Musgrove is going, and it's always scary to recommend Musgrove because it's often gone very poorly this year.
Even versus Seattle?
Well, yeah. I mean, anytime. There have been so many blow-ups for Musgrove this year at inopportune times, just when you think he's turning things around. But this has been a stretch of 6 starts where only one of them's bad, a 3.89 ERA overall during that stretch, right at a strikeout per inning. And it's Seattle, like you said. So I feel much better about that one than Lyles.
Who'd you rather hear, Joe Musgrove or Homer Bailey, if you had to do your Wednesday start or your Thursday start?
I would say Musgrove.
Musgrove. Okay, so there's a little bit of concern, but you're confident overall then?
No, I'm not confident in any of these pitchers.
At least over. I'm sorry. You're confident over Bailey. Because I felt like we talked kind of swimmingly about Homer Bailey. We're talking negative on Musgrove, yet he's over Homer Bailey. So I'm just trying to parse out what the next 2 days look like.
Right. No, I get that. And that's good. It's good to put everything into context. I would say, you know, it's more about the history of Musgrove that makes me speak fearfully of him in terms of just personal history. Just so many times this year, I thought it was going to go well and it went very poorly instead. And it's just kind of one of those pitchers who's prone to the meltdown. I think he's better. I think he's a better pitcher than Homer Bailey. So when things are going well, and look, Seattle's a better matchup even than KC, who Homer Bailey's facing. So that helps contribute to it too.
How about some first starts here? I got four names for you, and give me, give me a thought if you feel really confident, if your lack of confidence is seeping through here. The first starts, Andrew Plutko, who took over for Plesac. He went six, gave up 2 earned runs, 6 strikeouts. This was on Tuesday. Vince Velasquez went 5, 2 earned runs with 8 strikeouts. He's got Cleveland up next. Not that we've really talked about him, but it was a good night. Martin Perez, 4 2/3 innings, 10 hits, but only 3 earned runs with 4 strikeouts. He's got Kansas City next. And Mitch Keller, who is a Nick Pollock special here, first start was good, went 5, gave up 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. And he's got that Yelich-less Milwaukee start later in the weekend. So where does your confidence lead you to in whatever two start confidence sits with these guys that I know you're actually not confident about?
They're all below Musgrove and Bailey for me. I think Plutko is probably the place I'd look first, but I don't really buy the skill set other than limiting walks. I don't see what it is he does well. And I think he's been pitching over his head, and Philadelphia is a tough matchup. And no, I just don't want to do that. I mean, Mitch Keller, great that he pulled it out today. Good for Nick on that call. 3 of his previous 4 were awful. And even without Yelich at Milwaukee for a pitcher who's had so many ups and downs, I don't trust that at all.
So all of these guys are, I mean, not that these are any of these were swimming to start guys for you anyways.
Right.
I was kind of into when it was Plesac and then it turned into Plutko, he looked really good. But Philly and Cleveland, Velasquez's matchup, those two are less than ideal. It's just Perez with Kansas City looks really good, and Keller is there. But the two start doesn't mean anything for you for the weekend.
No, I mean, two start is only interesting in weekly leagues where you're getting both the starts, I feel like. You know, beyond that, obviously, there's not any significance to it. And Perez, I mean, it was the White Sox today, right? That he gave up 10 hits in 4 2/3 innings. And there hasn't really been a lot in, you know, other than that great start to the season he had, there hasn't been a lot to get excited about from him. I mean, if you're mashing together two great matchups, you cross your fingers one of them's going to be good. But when you're down to just a 1-for-1 shot, which is what that second start is in a league where you're setting daily lineups, no.
All right, let's take a quick break. You guys thought I forgot about something. I didn't forget about it. We're hitting the worryometer when we come back from this break. You betcha.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It is a Worryometer Wednesday. I just didn't say it at the top of the episode, but you guys know it's implied. It's Wednesday. Who are we worried about? Well, how about the very talked about John did not means business in his first start in those two starts. 5 2/3 innings, 5 earned runs. Ugh. 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. He has got Seattle coming up next as his next start here. So what do you think? Where is the worryometer on the second start for John Means?
He's a two-start pitcher that I got behind more at the start of the year. I actually picked him up to use him in a relief pitcher spot in a head-to-head points league, one of those that I'm playing I'm vying for the championship in. And obviously it hasn't gone well. He's not a pitcher whose skill set I buy into completely, but contrasting him with somebody like Adam Plutko or Julio Teheran or another one of those pitchers who isn't really showing the skills but is getting the results, it seems like Mean's quality of contact is superior from a pitching standpoint. His ex-WOBA and ex-batting average are lower than those other pitchers. And just low in general. So I would put it at like a 5. I'm not immediately yanking him from my lineup if I still have a chance to, but
people are gun shy. I just want to throw that out. Yeah. We got some tweets about it. Nothing harmful, nothing crazy. I think the majority of everybody, Pollock was with us on this. Everyone was kind of with that. Like, hey, listen, John Means is near the top of the list of good matchups for a pitcher that has performed at a relatively high level. It just doesn't always work out. I mean, skill sets, you know, sometimes implodes a little bit. He had been coming off of, what was it, 5 straight starts where he hadn't given up over 2 earned runs. Strikeouts were there. He was getting some wins. And he gets the best matchup of maybe he's had in his last 7 starts outside of Kansas City. And he gets blown up a little bit. But there's a lot of people that feel gun-shy. You have a worryometer 5, mm-hmm. but you are still going to put him out there this weekend.
I mean, he's not an automatic sit, is what I'm saying. Like, it depends what you need. If your needs are mainly ERA and WHIP, probably not. If your needs are strikeouts and wins, probably. If it's a points league, and, you know, that's generally not the kind of leagues where you're setting daily lineups, but then I think it's a yes.
I would put my worryometer around 6 or 7 because of what's left here. And trying to determine, is John Means this Seattle start truly better than some of the stuff that we've already talked about? I'm not so sure. If you had John Means at the beginning of the week, you're probably somebody that is looking at Alcantara. You are probably looking at Plutko later in the week, or any of maybe even a Homer Bailey. You're probably in that territory now. So if you're able to right the ship a little bit, I would feel very concerned about John Means taking me out at the end. But it's circumstantial. You guys see where you're at on the back end of the week. It is a really good matchup, and if you're trying to catch back up with ratios, you put him out there. If you're holding tight, I don't know. I can't imagine you're holding tight because he probably blew you up a little bit. So maybe you do start him no matter what.
Well, I mean, I would probably rank Bailey, well, Musgrove, I guess, first. Musgrove and Bailey ahead of him if we're ranking one start sleepers, I guess, at this point is what we're calling them.
Yeah, that's where we're at now.
Yeah, I would probably put between Means and Alcantara. That's a tough call.
I like Sandy. I don't like him going against Arizona, but Ketel Marte is going to probably be out for that start, which helps it even a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Sandy.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, we'll go Means fourth here in the pecking order.
I like it. All right, number 2 on the worryometer. I was digging around, and I was going through a lot of the drops and the views, and this was a really interesting name. If I can keep stalling for time to find my place again. I'm doing the Scott White. I'm just trying to find my place. All right, was this catcher Will
That's
Smith?
That's what I do.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, keep talking until
That's
you
my
get
thing.
There. Yeah. Will Smith was the most dropped hitter on CBS that didn't have an injury currently, as I went and looked. Only 3 hits in September. His average, which walked into September, was at 292. Sure, he doesn't have a million at-bats or anything like that, but still, he walked into September with a 292 batting average. It is down to 250 coming into Tuesday. A lot of catching options are out there. We've talked about guys like Sean Murphy. Some other guys are catching fire. So worryometer at this point in the year on Will Smith, who is also 0-2 as the Dodger-Tampa Bay game is going on right now.
Yeah, worryometer for Will Smith, I would put at about a... I'm going to put it at a 6. I was debating between 6 and 7. I'm putting it at 6 because I feel like you're... Alternatives at catcher are still pretty limited, though Sean Murphy is a good one. I don't know. I assume you and Nick talked about him on Monday and how suddenly, I guess it started with the 2-homer game, but he looks like the Athletics' primary option behind the plate, as he should be, because he's a great defender who's made huge strides offensively the past 2 years, remind you of anyone else? It should remind you of Will Smith. But the strikeout history isn't nearly as pronounced. I mean, it's non-existent. I mean, even when he wasn't a good hitter, Sean Murphy wasn't a guy who struck out. So I could see making that switch. I don't have either team's matchups pulled up for the next week, but that would be worth knowing. And I pull it up right now. So the Dodgers have 6 games against Padres and Giants. That's pretty good.
Those are pretty good.
Oakland has 6 games against the Angels and Mariners. That's even better.
Even better.
Yeah. So I could see making that switch. And more than that, I mean, Will Smith, part of what got me excited about him and what got everybody excited about him, I'm sure, is...
Would you say you getting jiggy with it? Sorry.
No.
Sorry. I apologize.
And I shouldn't have laughed at that.
No, you shouldn't have. I apologize to everybody. Probably ended my CBS career right there. If I'm not back, you know why. It's because of I did the getting jiggy with it thing.
Yeah. but what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I mean, he the strikeouts prior to this year were terrible for Will Smith. And then he really seemed to overcome that AAA this year. I mean, here in September with the struggles, he's striking out like 35% of the time. It's been really bad. And, you know, maybe he's going to overcome that in the near future. But I'm kind of worried about Will Smith in terms of next year, too, because I'd written the column previewing catcher rankings for next year. I'd penciled him in there in the 5 spot.
I was about to say, yeah, it was top 5, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't turn things around in a significant way, and I'm assuming he'll have all postseason to do that too, but...
assuming he's going to be given the full-time opportunity, if he keeps hitting like this, they might bring out those alternative options.
Really good defender. But as things stand now, I think I'd have to move Mitch Garver ahead of him for 5th. I don't see myself dropping Will Smith lower than 6th, but you know that kind of depends how things play out for Sean Murphy too, because he has a lot of upside himself.
And I think that is a good spot for it. 7 on the worryometer, and there are droppable options out there if you are dealing with the worry of Will Smith. What else is going around the league? Well, Mookie Betts. Ailing left foot showed inflammation as he had an MRI on Monday. It's good news, but ultimately I feel a little Trout-ish here because it's like, what do I do with it? I don't know. I mean, you know, if you're locked into a lineup, you're good to go. If you've got alternative options, you need to kind of keep going with that. But it's just another, I mean, how many MVPs can we have knocked out of the end of the year? I'm not saying he's knocked out because we just don't know, but it's unfortunate that this is happening on this run right here.
Yeah, and it's going to certainly lend credence to the argument you need to end your season early in fantasy baseball and not even worry about this. So, I mean, these are all injuries that would sideline players certainly in the case of Trout and Yelich, injuries that would sideline players for weeks. It just so happened to happen in September, but it could have happened in August, you know, August 1st, and same situation probably.
Could have. So, could have, would have, didn't. I'm a big proponent for September 1st being the end of your playoff season.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, bad timing as opposed to the timing of it contributing to the prognosis of the injury. Now, Mookie Betts' case might be different because Mookie Betts might be a day-to-day thing that they just run out of days with. Mm. Or at least, you know, if you're talking setting a weekly lineup, he has 5 days to get back in the lineup, 4 days to get back in the lineup. If you're really going to trust him for that final week. And I'm not confident that's going to happen.
If he does, once he's good, you put him back in. There's no worries that go along with him. It's just, is he going to get back there? Another one that we lost, we actually lost a couple guys for the rest of the year, at least getting shut down. We got Lucas Giolito, who shut down for the rest of the year after he was diagnosed with a mild right lat strain. And the other one, as I had him in a different area, was Chris Paddock. Chris Paddock is officially done for the year after going on Tuesday, 5 innings, 1 earned run, and 9 strikeouts.
Finally.
Yeah, it's done. But, I mean, I kind of got you there.
I got to say, I mean, it all year, since the first whispers of him potentially making the opening day or the first rotation at the start of the year for the Padres, we've talked about, okay, he's not going to make it all season. Just understand that if you're going to invest in him, he's not going to, like, he may not make it through August, right? I didn't think he would make it through August. It turns out, all but the last week of the season, you were able to start him. He did take, I guess, that he did miss that turn. What was it, like in June, July, something like that? He missed a turn, got sent to the minors where he didn't make a start. But
that's how you manage a young pitcher like this, though. That is the, I mean, to me, that's the prototypical, especially for fantasy owners. If we had more teams committed to treating these young pitchers like that, we would have much more confidence in moving along with him. Though not all the young pitchers do anything remotely close to what Chris Paddock did this year.
Well, here we are nearing the end of September, and he threw only 140 innings. Part of that was also they kind of basically went six-man rotation with just him. And so that meant few two-start weeks for him this year, and obviously that made a difference, too, in how you used him. But next year, I mean, the fact he managed to go 140 innings, I think he's just going to be free to pitch. Maybe not entirely free, but I think 180 innings is certainly on the table. And apart from proven aces, you don't expect more than 180 innings from anybody. So especially the way Paddock finished this season, his final four starts, one earned run in the total, you know, combined between the four starts, 32 strikeouts to four walks and 23 and a third innings. And it was just a very impressive season. And he's going to be in the discussion, I think, for top 25, you know, up there with guys like Yu Darvish, I think, heading into next year.
I think so. Now, this was dicey. I need to go into what the deal is, but I just want to bring this up. And if there's something quickly you want to drop with it, Felipe Vasquez with the Pirates is done. He is done as a Pirate. I think he's done as a baseball player, and he might be done as a free civilian with some pretty horrific allegations that are out there. Allegations, of course, but Felipe Vasquez, it's nasty stuff. But we also had people asking, clearly you drop him. What does the situation in Pittsburgh look like if you are, if you're just trying to deal with it for the rest of the week and a half that's going on? Because Felipe Vasquez will not wear a Pirates uniform again.
That's a good question. And I hadn't really, I guess, looked beyond the headline to that aspect of it.
We had a couple emails about it that, I mean, everybody is kind of with the narrative of, like, you know, talking about what the stuff is because it's bad, but then also being like, well, what exactly do I also do? I mean, Keone Kella kind of maybe seems like be the guy? I mean, their bullpen is riddled. I mean, ironically, the Kyle Crick thing, him and Vasquez and Crick getting into a whole thing, but Crick is out for the season. So Kella seems like the likely guy.
And he has closing experience. He was the Rangers closer for most of last year. He's pitched well since coming back from the IL. I would guess he's the guy. I'm not sure speculating on a Pirates closer is something I'm that interested in doing this time of year, but Kella's a good reliever, and he may turn in a surprising save total in this week and a half. I guess a surprising saves total would be like four, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can look for it. Just some other quick notes here. Dela Patance is diagnosed with a partial tear of his left Achilles tendon, out for the year and might miss 2020 time. Craig Kimbrell tossed a 16-pitch simulated game on Tuesday in Wrigley Field. There's a thought process he might come back this weekend. Maybe you can save a save or two. We'll have to monitor that. Phillies placed Corey Dickerson on the 60-day with a fractured left foot. Your guy, Joe Kipnis. Jason is done for the year with a fractured Hammett bone in his right wrist. Ooh.
Yeah, that one made me sad.
Yeah, it does. Jorge Alfaro, day-to-day with a left-hand contusion. Looks like Piscotty might not return. And in two positive notes, the Mariners activated Domingo Santana from the 10-day IL, and Keston Hira returned to the starting lineup going 1-for-3. So those are some positive hitter notes for people. Anything we need to know or digest on any of those guys? Domingo Santana coming back, Hira back in, anything of relevance?
I mean, Hira actually being back in the lineup is a pretty big deal. He's been getting a lot of industry buzz in, like, early mock draft contexts. People really high on him. And I kind of understand, but no, like, everybody's overlooking this crazy high strikeout rate he's had as a rookie. Maybe just because, you know, he wasn't that kind of strikeout guy in the minors. Maybe that's fair, but I don't know. It it concerns me some. I'm also not sure how much Domingo Santana is actually going to play. He wasn't in the lineup today. Obviously, Kyle Lewis. I mean, between he and Nico Horner, you know, my dismissal of both is looking pretty horrible.
Which, by the way, you finish, and then I'll tell you about the most added hitters because there's relevance to the players you just mentioned.
Yeah. Now, I did make Kyle Lewis the cover boy of my top 10 sleeper hitters for this upcoming week.
Excellent. I was giving Kyle Lewis...
He did strike out four times today, though.
Right after I gave him kind of the front run of being like, Kyle Lewis is a guy that you pick over some pretty serious names right now. He's the hot bat. Kind of, you almost take the, I think I was saying it with Nick, kind of the Aquino approach that it's like, sometimes these guys with the higher strikeout profiles, you know, that catch fire with their bat, you know, Aquino is kind of the backdrop for what Kyle Lewis could be the rest of the year. We just didn't know when it was going to end with Kyle Lewis. Hopefully it's not the top of it, which, by the way, the top four hitters added on CBS right now, Kyle Lewis at the top, up to 33% owned, 4 homers, 9 RBIs in his last 6 games. Sean Murphy was number 2, who we talked about, a guy to take over Will Smith, up to 32% owned, 4 homers, 8 RBIs in 10 games. Nico Horner, number 3 most added, up to 30%. He was 1-for-4 on Tuesday. And I thought this was interesting. Trent Grisham was the fourth most added, up to 30%. He's got hits in 4 of his last 5 games. And I feel like you look at all those outfield injuries. People lost Yelich. You're losing Mookie Betts. Mike Trout is out. Grisham kind of seems like the guy I think that a lot of people have moved to. And I think it's, for the most part, paying off, though Kyle Lewis would have been the play.
Yeah, Grisham actually was also in my top 10 sleeper hitters for this upcoming week. It was a righty-loaded schedule for the Brewers. I haven't fully vetted this yet, obviously, but it's looking like another righty-loaded schedule for them next week. So that would be good news for the left-handed hitting Grisham, who, let's see, is he batting? He's in the leadoff spot today. Has that been the norm for him? Because that's also a pretty big deal. And it looks like it has been the norm for him. So yeah, another reason to get behind Grisham.
So how about this for you? Someone that we've talked a lot about, like 20 seconds ago, Aristides Aquino, hit his 16th homer on Tuesday, but he went 1-for-4. He's still, he's a lot of what, like, I think we're figuring out exactly the type of player that he is as he's starting to level out. Would you want Kyle Lewis or Trent Grisham over Aquino for the last week and a half of the season?
Well, that would be largely matchups based, I feel like. And I say that, yeah, I understand it's been an awful September for Aquino. This was only his second home run for the month. And he's batting like, let's see, he's 156 in his previous 18 games before tonight. But it hasn't been like Will Smith because he's striking out every third at bat. It hasn't been that. And so it doesn't concern me quite as much. I think, obviously, he's not a must-start anymore. That's certainly in 3 outfielder leagues, that's fair to say. But the strikeout rate's higher than I thought. It's less than 30%, though, so that's not as bad as Will Smith. But it's not good. It would be matchups-based, I would say, just to sum it up.
So maybe they're all in the same line, though. They're even.
Yeah.
That's the key.
I mean, I would break. Aristides Aquino would still be a tie breaker for me. And looking at the Reds matchups, they got the Brewers and Reds next week.
Well, they don't play.
I'm sorry, they are the Reds. The Brewers and Pirates next week.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good matchups. Some good starting pitching performances on Tuesday. Patrick Corbin struck out 11, no earned runs in 6. Justin Verlander, 8-6 with no earned runs. Marcus Stroman with a really good start. Really been good since I was questioning him on the back half of this this playoff run. 7 no earned runs with 7 strikeouts. Mike Gonzalez went out there, 7 no earned runs with 4 strikeouts. And we already talked about Paddock. But what about these good pitchers but runs given up? We had 3 of them. Yu Darvish, who went 7, gave up 1 walk, 13 strikeouts, but 4 earned runs. Sonny Gray gave up 4 earned runs, but he went 6 2/3 with 9 strikeouts. And Lance Lynn went 7 with 4 earned runs and 8 strikeouts. All performances you're going to take, but none are quality starts. So good pitchers, but what's with the runs, man?
Well, Yu Darvish, his previous 11 starts, a 2.44 ERA, 0.78 whip, 12.6 K per 9. That was his previous 11. Sonny Gray, his previous 14, a 1.75 ERA, 0.92 whip, 10.88 K per 9. Nobody's worrying about them. Lance Lynn, I could see how people might worry about him. It's been a six-start stretch now. I think this one moves his ERA during that stretch over four. But it was three home runs in this game, a combined two in the previous five. So it's not like he's giving up a lot of home runs. Four of the six, he's allowed five hits or fewer. The swinging strike rate has been great. The strikeouts have been great. I don't see any reason to actually worry about Lance Lynn, even though the results have been worse. I would just stick with him.
I've got a couple emails I swear we're actually going to hit. Just like, let's hit two or three. These are 2020 based. I've been teasing it for a week, but guys, we got so much to talk about that, you know, we can't take away the stuff that's winning people championships right now. But fantasybaseball at CBSI.com, you send them in. Maybe this last episode, the Monday episode, we'll try to really get some of these in and get a good little 2020 in. First up, Dear Lucky, Dusty, Ned, and El Guapo. Do you know what that's from?
That is the Three Amigos.
Adam Azer. Let me tell you something about this Azer. He had the audacity to send me this email and then go, hey, do you know the reference? And I said, do I know the reference?
It
and
seems he's like, your wheelhouse. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He's like, well, you only know Nick Swardson. And I said, all right, you have now guns have been drawn here. You guys have never seen The Jerk. Don't tell me about Steve Jerk. Martin movies. I replied to him within 7 seconds of this email. El Guapo gives it away. One of the best movies of all time. Sorry. Keeper question. 7x7 league with runs, homers, RBI, doubles and triples, stolen base average and OBP, forever keeper, Hira or Lux at $1. That's from Brendan in Thunder Bay. Ooh.
I'm sure Hira is going to get drafted first next year between these two. And he may be the safer play. He may be. Like there, he's been hyped as, you know, elite bat from the day he was drafted. I feel like Lux at his best would have more to offer because Hira, I mean, I don't think the strikeouts are going to continue necessarily, but the walk rate, he's not a guy who's going to get on base much aside from the hits. So I would go Lux.
I think this one is really, really close. I'm going to go with Hira by a very, very small margin. Though, if you're talking in redraft context, it's funny. I have all the shares of Lux in every early mock draft I'm doing because nobody is valuing him where he should be. But I think they're pretty close, and that's a pretty good value. Let's see. Who is this from? Hey, guys. Thanks for keeping the podcast going as we're winding through the playoffs. Great stuff. That said, however, I want to plan for 2020. 16 team can keep one hitter and pitcher. The catch is you lose. They have to have been drafted after round 5. Who would you keep from the following? The hitters are Bo Bichette, DJ LeMahieu, Joey Gallo, and Gio Urshela. That's got to be Joey Gallo, right? I'm gonna say Joey, though. I want to take Bichette.
Yeah. Oh man, it's definitely not Urshela.
No.
I don't think we could dismiss LeMahieu out of hand either. But
I don't think it's about dismissing. I think it's just like clearly got to be Gallo or Bichette. Yeah, not to say that DJ isn't close.
I mean, this is one hitter, one pitcher. You're playing this one year to the next. This isn't like the last question I keep forever scenario.
Exactly.
I think you go Gallo. It's just whoever's going to get drafted earliest next year, and I think it's Gallo.
I agree. Pitchers, he has Brad Hand, Kirby Yates, and Lucas Giolito. It's clearly going to be Giolito. And he said he was leaning Bichette and Giolito, but we are going to go with Gallo and Giolito. Chris from Nashville, longtime listener, and love the new Chris. Would you look at that? Thank you, Chris. I traded away my postseason hopes for keepers. Keep up to 10 players. I've got 7 players I know who to keep. I'm having trouble picking my last 3. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's got Eduardo Escobar, Tommy Pham, Zach Gallen. I believe that's Caleb Smith, Brantley Heaney, Dahl, and Woodruff. Those are the 7 he's keeping. Those are to choose from. He's got Otani, Soto, Mondesi, Paddock, Snell, Corbin, and Alonso. So he's got 3 pitchers, Otani of a 4. So this is Gallen, Pham, and Eduardo Escobar pretty easy. Do you agree?
Gallen, Pham, and Eduardo Escobar.
Would you replace Caleb Smith? Yeah, would you replace Caleb Smith or Brantley with any of those 3 that I just listed? Gallen, Pham, or Escobar?
Are these prices that he's keeping them for next to them?
I think they're rounds. It's not clear.
Oh, round number?
I want to say that they're round. I mean, Woodruff at 22 is pretty nice.
Honestly, I think Brantley's the top keeper of all of them.
Okay.
Michael Brantley.
So then so who gets knocked? Escobar, Pham, or Gallon?
Considering it's a categories league, I would say Gallon. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm with that. It's kind of a bummer. Oh, you know why also? It's clearly that, too. Let's point this out. He only has Soto as his other outfielder. So I'm assuming, and he says this is a five outfielder league. So get another one in there. Brantley clearly is that. So I think that is a good one. And real quick one. Hey, real quick. Sean says, will Carlos Carrasco be a SPRP guy next year or fall short on appearances?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how many relief appearances he's made. I can look it up real quick. He's at six. He needs to make 10. I think unlikely, but possible.
It's within a reach. So monitor if you get four more in the next, seven, 8 days? I think that's possible. He has been going
possible,
a little bit deeper.
But it's not likely. He appeared today, so it's five.
All right, we're getting
five
there.
He needs to make. Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go, Carlos Carrasco. All right, good stuff. Send those emails in, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and we will try to answer your stuff, whether we can help you out in the final week of this season or it's looking to 2020. And just like Scott said, make sure you guys are locked in because there's going to be content on here, even if Scott's rocking with all your 2020 takes, and it'll be kind of probably a more free-flowing type of an episode. You guys can follow us on Twitter at CBSI Scott White. You can follow me on Twitter at Is It The Welsh. Again, if you want to check out my Royce Lewis interview that's coming up, that'll be on my show Prospect One later this week. All you Dynasty people that are into prospects, I'll be doing lots of interviews, so that should be cool stuff. But until then, friendos, we got you guys set for the rest of this week up until Friday, and we'll get you through the weekend, and then we will be having the final two episodes. So thank you all for listening, and we will be back on Friday right here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.